This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature. Welcome to Musings from Greek 365, a podcast series of 8 episodes created by the students in an advanced undergraduate Greek course on Homer's Iliad at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Deborah Beck, the course instructor. This first episode of our class podcast introduces our series, both for the students who will be making the other 7 episodes, and for you, our listeners out there in podcast land. Each episode will feature a member of our class talking about a particular passage from the Iliad that they have recently taught. We'll also be talking about our experiences with talking about the Iliad, both with one another in class and with you all in a podcast. The series assumes a general familiarity with the plot of the Iliad and with Homeric Greek, but each episode provides a bit of background and context for the specific passage that it talks about. The organization of this series follows the sequence of the Iliad, but each episode is designed to be freestanding. So it should be possible to listen to any episode by itself or to listen to the episodes in any order. Our class focuses primarily on the last 3 books of the Iliad, in which the Trojan prince Hector is killed by the Greek hero Achilles to avenge Hector's killing of Achilles' beloved comrade Patroclus in battle. The last 2 books of the Iliad show us both sides, the Greeks and the Trojans, conducting rituals of mourning for their dead. This is one of many features of the Iliad that gives the Trojans and the Greeks the same emotional weight in the story. The Iliad is not a story in which one side are the good guys and their enemies are evil or depraved or even noticeably different from the people on the other side. One way we see this is that the rituals that the Greeks and Trojans perform to honor their dead are basically the same, and the poem gives equal time and attention to both sides. So, Book 23 describes the athletic games that the Greeks hold in honor of Patroclus, which are a combination of funeral and football game. Book 24, the last book of the poem, depicts Hector's father Priam making a dangerous nighttime journey to the Greek camp, which lies outside the walls of his besieged city, in order to offer ransom to Achilles to buy back the corpse of his son. When Priam brings Hector's corpse back to Troy, Hector's female relatives lament for him, the city holds a funeral, and the poem comes to an end. The main focus of this podcast episode is the literal turning point of the final encounter between Hector and Achilles, Book 22, verses 199 to 213. At the beginning of this passage, a memorable and frequently imitated epic simile describes the pursuing Achilles and the fleeing Hector, as Achilles cannot capture his quarry and Hector cannot escape. A rhetorical question tells the audience that only the presence of Apollo enabled Hector to escape death, while Achilles keeps chasing him and preventing any other Greeks from getting involved. As they complete their third circuit around the walls of Troy, Zeus weighs the fate of each of them, of Hector and of Achilles, in a gold balance. As Zeus holds the balance by its middle, Hector's fate is the one that sinks lower. Book 22 uses a number of similes to narrate the chase scene with Hector and Achilles that began back at verse 131 and concludes at verse 250, which is when Achilles and Hector finally come to a stop and face each other with both words and physical attacks on the battlefield outside the city. All the other similes in the chase compare Achilles and Hector to various animals, which is the most common kind of simile seen in battle narrative. The simile at verses 199 to 201, on the other hand, is different and in fact is unique in Homeric epic. It compares Achilles and Hector to a dream in which there are 2 people, one of whom cannot escape and one of whom cannot capture someone who's trying to escape. This is the only Homeric simile that depicts a dream. The structure of the Greek in these verses is so compressed that it's extremely difficult to translate. A literal translation is almost unintelligible, and a translation that is appealing and workable as English has to diverge fairly substantially from what the Greek itself says. Verse 199, in fact, hos en onero ou dunatai phaeganta diokein, depicts a dream chase as one single action with one main verb, dunatai, without an explicitly stated subject. As Irena de Jong says about this simile in her excellent commentary on Book 22, the narrator, quote, places himself in the position of both Achilles and Hector. And the universal experience of dreaming that we're trying to run or to flee without seeming to make any progress places us, the audience, in the position of both of the characters as well. Similes are one way that Homeric narrative temporarily reaches outside the story by including something that the characters themselves don't know about. So characters don't know about epic similes. They don't know they've just been compared to a dream. And this is another insight that I owe to Irena de Jong from a 1985 article published in the journal Mnemosyne. And characters also don't know about rhetorical questions, which are a very rare feature of Homeric poetry, in which the narrator of the poem speaks directly to the audience. The mere presence of the rhetorical question in verses 202 to 204 creates emphasis and attracts the audience's attention. The narrator says, and here I'm going to translate rather than reading the Greek, how could Hector have escaped the agents of death if Apollo had not stood close by him for the last and final time, Apollo, who roused in him strength and swift knees? This is one of several features of this passage, and of the chase scene more generally, that cast the gods as key actors. One way that the chase is elongated for the audience and the narrative is through a conversation among the watching gods about whether or not to save Hector. Zeus floats the idea of doing this, but Athena discourages him because, as she says, the other gods would not approve. She says, go ahead, implying that he has the ability to do it. But the fact that the other gods would think it was a bad idea is apparently enough to dissuade him. So, what does Apollo's involvement with Hector mean here? Does it mean that Hector's destiny was temporarily postponed simply by the presence and aid of a god? Does Apollo simply represent an external, concrete way of depicting an adrenaline rush that helped Hector to escape Achilles for a long time, even though the narrative regularly reminds us that Achilles is the better and faster warrior of the two? We can ask a similar question about the balance in which Zeus weighs the fates of Achilles and Hector in verses 209 to 213. Here, Achilles and Hector are depicted in some detail as equals. For one thing, their fates of death in verse 210, Kera ten elega asthana toya, which Zeus places in the balance, are presented as the same. The fates themselves are in the dual, Kera, and that verse 211 consists of an extremely parallel correlative mendes structure that assigns one fate to Achilles, tein men achilleas, and the other one to Hector, tein de hectoras hippodamoia, where, interestingly enough, Hector has an epithet and Achilles does not. As the side of the balance with Hector's fate in it sinks, several things happen simultaneously in a series of three short ascendetic clauses in the second half of verse 212 and verse 213. First, Hector's fatal day, Hectoros Aisimon Amar, sinks. At the beginning of verse 213, it goes down to Hades. And in the second half of the verse, Apollo leaves him, Lipendeha Phoebos Apollon. The action of the balance in the imperfect tense with both repe in 212 and oicheta in verse 213 provides a kind of backdrop for Apollo's departure, which is narrated in the aorist with lipen in verse 213. Different people see this sequence and the involvement of the gods in different ways. When the class read this passage for a recent assignment, some of them saw Zeus as the decider of Hector's fate. On the other hand, we could also argue that the balance as the instrument for making this decision suggests that Zeus is measuring something external to himself rather than being directly responsible for what happens here. Similarly, many of us were asking, why does Apollo leave and what does this mean? Is his departure a direct response to the falling of Hector's side of the balance? Or do the balance on the one hand and Apollo's departure on the other provide two different complementary indications that Hector's time is now up? The Iliad shows over and over again how important the gods are to what happens to mortals and to how they behave, but neither in this scene nor anywhere else is it easy to understand exactly how the gods affect human behavior and human experience in the Iliad. Whatever the case may be, the close attention that the gods pay to this chase as it unfolds, and to Hector in particular, helps to rouse the audience's sympathy for him and to make the Iliad a universal story of loss and war rather than a more simplistic and less interesting victory song of the Greeks. Thank you so much for tuning in. This concludes the first episode of our podcast series, Musings from Greek 365. I'm Deborah Beck, and my students and I hope very much that you'll tune in to further episodes of our podcast. If you have any thoughts or feedback for us, please leave us a comment. Thanks.